Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Captiva Live Radio, a weekly show brought to you by Captiva Foundation, a Texas nonprofit, nonpartisan information and intelligence network for citizen engagement and political participation. My name is Felipe Wicochea, and today we have a lot of topics to cover. We're going to talk a little bit about elections. We're going to talk about a pervasive problem in our society, which is domestic violence. And we're going to talk also about a petition we have for local, Texas state representatives. And we're going to talk a little bit about local elections across the state of Texas on May 1st. So we're going to jump right into politics. We're going to talk just a brief overview on how the current delegate count is going for both Democrats and Republicans in the presidential election, which obviously sucks all the air in the media and is getting a lot of attention. It's been an unprecedented campaign in modern times, and it has a lot of people worried about the future of this country. So in the Democratic side, we have the front runner, Hillary Clinton, with 1,712 delegates. We have then followed by Bernie Sanders with 1,004 delegates. You need, in order to get the nomination, 2,383 delegates, and there's still 2,049 delegates to be won in the primaries for the Democrats. I want to also mention here in the Democratic side, there's a candidate which you probably haven't heard of, and that's something that as Latinos should worry us. His name is Roque de la Fuente, Rocky. He's a California businessman, a Latino, bilingual, and the Democratic Party has gone through a great extent in order to exclude him of getting any coverage, any media attention, any visibility, despite the fact that he has put out of his own pocket close to $4 million in this election. So he's committed to this run. He's in plus 40 state ballots. But yet, there's no mention of him, and I've been kind of jokingly mentioning that the Democratic Party wants its tacos without tortillas. They want the Latino vote, but they don't want the Latino candidates, and that's something we're going to be putting on the spot because I think Rocky deserves better. He has proven to be very committed to this race. He's funding his own campaign, and yet you rarely ever hear about him. We're in touch with his campaign team. We want to have an interview with him and a rather long conversation about his experience throughout the campaign and dealing with this uneven playing field that favors big candidates with big pockets. So we're gonna invite him to come to our show and talk about what it means for a Latino to run in the Democratic Party today. Now we jump to the Republican side. Donald Trump has 736 delegates. Ted Cruz has 463. And John Kasich has 143 delegates. There's a question regarding Marco Rubio, who, even though suspended his campaign, he's not officially out of the race. So the 171 delegates that were pledged to him will be free vote for another candidate if it's a contested convention in the Republican National Convention. In order to get the to secure the nomination on the Republican side, you would need 1,237 delegates. So Donald Trump is still a little over half of the delegates needed to secure the nomination, and you would the remaining 943 delegates are still up for grabs. So there's still a long way to go in this seemingly never-ending presidential race, but there's still chance for at least in the Republican side that we're going to see a lot of media and a lot of attention regarding how the race is going to be defined. Most likely, none of the candidates are going to have, well, particularly Donald Trump, most likely he's not going to have the 1,237 delegates needed, so it's going to go to a contested convention. Once there's no candidate with the minimum delegate requirement, they have to vote on a second round, and on that second round, all the delegates are free to change the way of their vote. So it's going to be a media circus what's going to happen in this Republican National Convention. There's also worth noting that there's an online petition for allowing, I mean, the convention is going to be held in Cleveland, Ohio. Ohio has a open carry laws, which means that people are allowed to carry their firearms in public, and there's close to 50,000 people demanding the National Republican Committee to allow carrying weapons to the event. The Secret Service, who's in charge of the security of the event, has declined that option. They said that no weapons are going to be allowed. And it's kind of ironic that people claim that they have the right to defend themselves and to carry weapons in this kind of events. And on the same side of the aisle, you have the people who are afraid of people carrying guns in their events. They claim that it wouldn't be safe. So that's there has to be an irony in their point to underline that the same party that tell us that we should feel safer if everyone's carrying a gun, they don't want guns in their own event. And the other paradox of this petition is that if the Secret Service were to concede or grant that petition, the cost of securing the event would will quadruple at least. So they would be spending taxpayers' money to secure an event so they can carry their weapons. So those who are pushing for more guns and less spending are putting forward a position which basically puts in question both positions, whether they are willing to make the Secret Service spend four or five times more than they would need, or they simply deny the petition to allow weapons during the event. So that's going to be another thing to be looking into in the next couple of days. Well, we're going to make a brief pause, and we'll come back to talk about our second topic of the day, which is domestic violence. Okay, we're back. If you want to call and comment about the topics that we are going to be covering today, the number to call is 347-850-1181. That's 347-850-1181. We want to hear from you, hear your opinion, hear your voice. This is an open show for the community, so if you want to add or comment about any of the topics, you're welcome to do so to that number. So domestic violence, it is a pervasive problem in our society, not only in the Latino community, but all across the board. There's deep concern about this, the impact that this problem has all across the U.S. Just to put it in perspective, one in four women are victims of domestic violence in the U.S. 15.5 million kids are exposed to domestic violence each year, and each year two women are killed in by their partners. So it is a huge problem here in the Dallas area where we mostly operate. In 2012, 26 women died as victims of escalated conflicts of domestic violence. So it is a widespread problem, and it affects not only the woman, which is 95% of the cases, according to studies and research in that subject. It's not only the woman, but children are also indirect victims by witnessing abuse in their homes, by being subject to this environment of uncertainty and constant fear that violence is going to erupt in the one place that should be sacred, that the one place that they should be feel safe. So it is something that we have to address. So in order to understand the problem, there's basically three types of violence. First is the physical violence, then sexual violence, and emotional. Physical violence includes, as you probably guess, any kind of physical abuse, any kind of punches, choking, pushing around, even throwing stuff at people. It's the kind of violence that inflicts bodily harm or physical damage. Then there's the sexual, which is basically forcing the partner to perform acts against their will. In the state of Texas, you cannot force your spouse to have sex. That's illegal. That's that constitutes rape. So also, I mean, at the core of abuse is the need of the abuser to be in control of any given situation. So usually the cycle starts with either verbal abuse or emotional abuse, isolation, sense of guilt, and the more the victim resists the abuse, the more likely it's going to escalate. Unfortunately, and sometimes it ends with the death of the victim, and of course all the disruption that it brings to the family environment. So in the types of violence, there's the emotional component to it, which basically is harassment, a constant sense of fear, intimidation, isolation. It normally starts with the partner isolating the victim from family, friends, controlling communications, cell phones, checking the phone every time the partner leaves, or wanting to know where the partner is at all times. So it's this kind of harassment and constant surveillance that inflicts the emotional damage, and it's a means to control the situation. There's also the financial abuse in which the woman is deprived from any access to financial means, so it's completely dependent on the partner in order to make any purchase. She has no control on money. In some cases, she's deprived from the effort of her own work, or it's completely cut off from the workforce. So those are the three principal components of domestic violence. And we want to be very clear in this instance, domestic violence is never acceptable. No one should accept violence, any form of violence, as something normal or something that it's response to stress or to difficulties. It's never an acceptable. It's never acceptable under any circumstances. And as a community, we need to understand the phenomena. In many cases, it's very easy to tell the victim, well, there's resources, there's help, there's places where you can go to get help. But we have to understand that this victim is operating from a place of fear. So for us that are out of the problem, it's easy to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But for the victim, it's not fear. Disrupts the function of the higher level of reasoning and judgment, and it basically makes us operate in fight or flight mode, very primitive reactions to fear, and we have to understand that the fear is there, and the intellectual approach is not always the best approach, because it doesn't connect with this primal fear in which the victim is living. So as a community, what can we do about it? Well, the first thing we can do is talk to our children, talk to in the family environment about this phenomena, be very bold and very clear that it's not acceptable, and of course educate our children so they don't become themselves abusers or victims of abuse, assuming that that's something normal or that's acceptable. And we also need to be very vigilant or aware of the people around us. Being able to identify the early stages of abuse is really, really important. The earlier that the victim detects that she's in a relationship, and I say she because, well, we already mentioned that 95% of victims are women. So the earlier that she can detect that she's in a relationship with an abuser and get out of that relationship, the better the outcome for everyone. So early signs is isolation. You can notice a coworker starts behaving erratic, or it's irritable, or starts cutting off, skipping social functions, starts isolating, starts talking with very, very, in a very cautioned manner, very afraid. So it's one of the signs that she's involved in a abusive relationship. And again, it not only happens between married couples, it can happen also with teenagers when they're dating, although nowadays kids, teenagers say that they just hang out, they don't actually date, but it can happen in romantic relationships outside of the marriage, and that has to be addressed and has to be detected early. There's a lot of resources that you can learn more about this problem. We're going to have a forum that Jactiva Foundation, the Mexican Consulate of Dallas, and Mosaic Catholic Charities, and the Fort Worth Police Department are putting together. It's going to be on Saturday, April the 2nd. You can check out our Facebook page for more information and details. about the event. It's going to be in Spanish. It's geared mostly towards immigrants and Spanish-speaking residents of the Fort Worth area, but you can check it out. So if you know anyone who might find this interesting, you can let them know that we're going to have this forum. It's the second. We had a first forum here in Dallas, and it was a very successful event. Well, we're going to stop this topic for now, and we're going to make a brief pause and move to the next subject. Remember, if you want to call and be part of the show, the number to call is 347-850-1181. That's 347-850-1181. Okay, we have a few minutes left in the program, and I want to take some time to talk about a petition that we placed in the change.org ORG platform. That petition has to do with an incident that happened a couple of weeks now here in north, in a suburb of Dallas. In brief, what happened is that a police officer, off-duty police officer from Farmers Branch, got into an altercation with two teenagers in an apartment complex. Allegedly, the teenagers were trying to break into a car in the apartment complex where the now former officer lived, and they got into a first altercation. The kids took off. The officer chased them in their in his private vehicle, then rammed the car into the back of the teenager's car. They lost control, and the police officer opened fire, shot the teenagers. One of them unfortunately died at the scene, and the other was taken to the hospital. Now it's recuperating from the gunshot wounds. So right after, and this is something, it's a tragic incident. The police officer resigned from the Farmers Branch Police Department. It's now facing charges for murder and aggravated assault, which I think it was a good response from the district attorney to file charges immediately. There was overwhelming evidence that the officer abused his power, that he conducted himself in a criminal way, and they filed charges. He's now on a very strict bond in Dallas. He is not allowed to leave Dallas County. He had to surrender any firearms in his possession, and is not allowed to speak to any of the witnesses involved. So one of the aspects that got my attention of all this incident is that the police officer was chasing suspects in his private vehicle, and that he intentionally rammed the car in the back. And I learned by the chief of the Farmers Branch Police Department that it's just a policy. And to top everything, I read a tweet from a congressman who is a state representative from the Farmers Branch area, sending his prayers for the family. So I was really upset, and I replied to the state representative that although the prayers were appreciated, that we needed to take legislative action. So Hactiva Foundation started this petition to ask the state legislator to enact a law that bans any off-duty officers from chasing suspects in private vehicles. In the process of ramming the teenager's cars in the incident that I described earlier, he put in danger a lot of people. And that's something that should have been prevented. I don't think policy at department level is enough to prevent this from happening again. I think if had the officer known that he would be breaking the law by chasing the suspects in his private vehicle, probably the outcome of the whole tragic incident would be different. But I think it's not enough to have it as a department policy, so we're calling state representatives to enact a law making it statewide, and I think that's going to prevent people getting hurt by off-duty police officers chasing suspects in their private vehicles. There are protocols and rules that they have to follow, but those rules and protocols are determined by their respective police department, and we have a lot of police departments across the state, a lot of levels of law enforcement, and I think it's important that we have a state law that deals with that matter. So there's a penalty for breaking that law that officers can be sanctioned if they do, and not leave that to the criteria or discretionality of individual police departments. So we're putting that petition forward. If it makes sense to you, if you want to sign it, you can find the links on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Hactiva. You're going to find the link to our petition there, and I'm going to be putting some more information about this case as it becomes available. So those are the subjects. Finally, brief reminder, we're going to be having local elections in the state of Texas, local meaning city council, school district level elections. Those are really important, although they don't get as much time and attention as national elections, presidential elections. Those are probably the ones that have the greatest impact in the quality of your everyday life. So city council members make decisions on budgets, on basic services, trash, street maintenance, parks, and all the things that can really have a huge impact in your everyday life. So I encourage you to participate in these elections. If you're not registered to vote, you can still be registered to vote and vote in the May 7 election. You have to be registered by April 7. So if you haven't done so, go to hactiva.org/RTV. R as in Richardson, T as in Thomas, V as in Victor, and register to vote. You can print out the paperwork, and you can register in Texas. There's other states that have online registration. You can do that as well if you're out of the state of Texas. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be on the air again next Tuesday, 5:30 Central Time. Thank you very much, and see you next time.